Now, today I'm the speaker, so I think I can't see a single person here who doesn't know who I am, so I'm not going to do an introduction. It's already 11 o'clock, and I just want to be sure we have time for a bit of discussion after. And I'll do my best here to not miss any more stuff in the order of service. Okay. All right. So today, the topic is ethical investing or divesting. And I'm happy to see you here on this beautiful December day. I've been trying to imagine your thoughts as you looked at the description of this talk. Well, that's boring. Or why would she talk about money or investing? Before going any further, I want to be clear that I am talking from a very personal point of view, and my focus isn't the actual money side of investing, but the decisions that go into ethical or socially and responsible investing. I hope this talk helps explain how my investment decisions were informed by our Unitarian principles. There have been many conversations in this building and congregation about living our principles. I find it helpful to discuss these things, and my decisions about investing are tied to several. For example, our seventh principle and protection of our environment are of utmost importance to me. So first I'll give a brief personal history that describes the source of my interest in ethical investing. Second, I'll give a short history of ethical investing. Third, I'll define what I mean by ethical investing and explain the objectives. Fourth, I'll talk a bit about ethical funds. And fifth, we'll look at some examples of divesting. And finally, does ethical investing or divesting really make a difference? And in the end, that's a choice we all have to decide, make. So first, the personal history. I've always done my banking at credit unions. I'm not sure what else you can call it. In part because the profit stays with the community. Fortunately, when Wayne and I married, he was willing to support this choice. My interest in ethical funds came about after my employment with the federal government ended in 1996. I had paid into a pension fund for 10 years, and when I left the government, decisions had to be made about what to do with the money. Would I keep the money in a pension plan, or would I opt for a payout and invest in a registered retirement savings fund? I'm not sure how long they were around at that time, but it had been a few years. I opted for the payout, and it was easy to say, put it in a retirement savings plan. But I had to make choices about the type of our RSP. Was I going to put money in mutual funds, term deposits, banks? What choices were there? Fortunately, credit unions had pioneered selling a type of investment called ethical funds. These funds seemed like a way to be socially responsible and still earn some interest on investments. I'll say more about ethical funds further on. And next, a brief history of ethical or socially responsible investing. And this was really quite interesting. Wikipedia says that the origins of socially responsible investing may date back to the Religious Society of Friends, or Quakers as we often know them. In 1758, the Quaker Philadelphia Yearly Meeting decided to prohibit members from participating in the slave trade, buying or selling humans. The same article goes on to say, one of the most articulate early adopters of socially responsible investing was John Wesley, one of the founders of Methodism. His sermon, titled The Use of Money, outlined his basic tenets of social investing, i.e., not to harm your neighbors through your business practices, and to avoid industries like tanning and chemical production. And remember, this is the 1700s. and these or other things that can harm the health of workers. Some of the best known applications of socially responsible investing were religiously motivated. Investors would avoid sinful companies, such as those associated with guns, liquor, and tobacco. Today, it's common for ethical investing to avoid tobacco-prohibited weapons, nuclear industries, and sometimes gambling. The modern era of socially responsible investing evolved during the political climate of the 1960s. During this time, socially concerned investors increasingly sought to address equality for women, civil rights, and labor issues. Economic development projects started or managed by Dr. Martin Luther King, like the Montgomery bus boycott and the Operation Breadbasket project in Chicago, established the beginning model for socially responsible investing efforts. Around the same time in Canada, there had been pressure from organizations to be more, for corporations to be more socially responsible. One of the areas of focus was shareholder engagement, which includes direct and indirect dialogue with corporations. Other areas of focus were environmental and health issues. This type of work is difficult for an individual, but when groups are involved, good things start to happen. So, next, what is ethical investing and what is divesting? The CUC, or Canadian Unitarian Council, currently has an investment manager for the endowment funds they hold. He has been extensively involved in socially responsible investing and impact investing since the late 1980s. Alan Harmon was a founding member of the Social Investment Organization, which later became Responsible Investment Organization. His personal passions include environmental protection and green energy, such as Ontario's first community solar project under the Ontario Green Energy Act. The solar energy has since been used by 23 churches in Toronto, including Neighborhood Unitarian, and also by Kingston Unitarian Fellowship. Alan Harmon wrote a short article called Engagement versus Divesting. What's a socially responsible investor to do? And he goes on to say, as a socially responsible investor, do you avoid certain companies and industries because their operations are inconsistent with your values? Or do you buy them and hold them and engage management in order to change the way they do business? What the two strategies have in common is the end goal of improving the environmental, social, and governance performance of companies and ensuring that your portfolio actually makes some money, if you have a portfolio. That's my words. The strategies, however, are quite different. Divesting, or negative screening, refers to avoiding ownership in companies with practices inconsistent with your values. Faith-based organizations have a long history with this strategy. They successfully utilized divestment to effect change in South Africa during the apartheid era. Shareholder engagement entails direct and indirect dialogue with corporations. It could be letter writing, meeting with the company, or going to the annual meeting and voicing your concerns. Churches in Canada were pioneers in shareholder engagement. In fact, back in the mid-1980s, the only organization in Canada doing this work was the Task Force on Churches and Corporate Responsibility, which is now known as Kairos. So ethical funds, I've mentioned those a couple of times, and those are a specific type of mutual funds that's marketed as ethical funds. Ethical funds are a type of mutual fund that were created about 30 years ago. The current manager gives this history. Ethical funds were established in 1986 based on the premise that an investment incorporating environmental, social, and governance factors would be better than one narrowly focused on share price only. Ethical funds entered into partnerships along the way with organizations such as the Responsible Investment Association, Shareholder Association for Research and Education, the Boreal Leadership Council, and Interfaith Center on Corporate Responsibility. Today, there are similar industry associations in every market in the world. So there has been some change brought about by this. And Ethical Funds undertook the task of developing the infrastructure necessary to screen companies, incorporating ESG factors into decision-making. NEI, which is the company that manages the Ethical Funds, so they all get their cut somewhere along the line, they suggest the most impactful achievement over the 30 years has been the advancement of corporate engagement as a core responsible investment strategy. They don't use the word ethical, they use responsible. Ethical Funds built a program to engage every company on their governance. And issues such as excessive compensation, energy transition, and corporate board diversity have become part of the public forum and things that they've focused on. One example of corporate governance that has received plenty of attention is board diversity. This week there was an article in the Leader Post talking about this very thing. You know, why do we want to have diversity on our boards? Why do we want representation? Those are my words. In the article, they say 3 years after regulators required publicly traded companies to disclose information about board diversity, there are more women on corporate boards than ever before. But advances in diversity have slowed to a glacial pace, according to a report from the Conference Board. Women represent 22.6% of directors on the boards of Financial Post 500 companies. There have been increases in the number of indigenous directors, people with disabilities sitting on corporate boards, although this is self-reported data. However, just 1.1% are indigenous persons, and there was less representation of both visible minorities and LGBTQ directors in 2017 compared with the year before. So the article suggests that the lack of targets and no term limits for board membership are two other reasons why there isn't faster change. There doesn't appear to be a lack of qualified directors, and the pressure does seem to have had some effect, but I'm not convinced this is enough to qualify a corporation for being included as an ethical investment. Another example of shareholder engagement is to push corporations on Aboriginal rights that are involved in resource extraction. The Ethical Funds website states they've been engaging on this issue for a decade and suggest this is a better way to do business. I'm not sure what they're saying it's better than. Maybe they mean protests and confrontation. I'm not sure. They promote consultation frameworks that respect local leadership and decision-making structures developed in concert with those communities. So as environmental, social, and governance considerations move into the mainstream, the idea is that shares in companies that aren't attuned to corporate... The idea is that shares in companies that aren't attuned to corporate governance matters or haven't adjusted their business model to meet climate change risks, they're simply bad investments over the long term. However, some of the ethical funds that are currently offered include companies ranging from Kraft Foods, Johnson & Johnson, Great West Life, GlaxoSmithKline. They're all huge companies. So I think ethical funds are now so popular that the original shine, if you will, is gone. I don't feel certain these large companies will really model my own ethical choices. And I've been disappointed to learn that in some of the ethical funds, they even invest in weapons. They just don't invest in prohibited weapons, whatever those are. There are other choices, though. which is where impact investing and divesting come in. Impact investing seeks to implement a more direct ethical change through investment dollars. It used to be that this type of investing was only available to really wealthy people. Today, this is changing. Purpose Capital, which is an independent investment advisory firm in Toronto, said there are about 200 impact investment products in Canada. So one example is Montreal-based CoPower. They provide loans for clean energy projects, which ordinary investors can buy. They sell bonds, which have 5-year and 3-year terms and give a pretty good rate of return. Another example might be purchasing shares in a utility company like TransAlta Renewals, which builds wind farms. Another big company, though, so I'm not sure how I feel about this. I'm a skeptic, what can I say? Divesting, on the other hand, is a type of negative screening. In the past decade, there has been a strong social movement to push institutions to divest themselves of investments. This is a way to be consistent with stated values. For example, the United Church of Canada decided to divest itself of all investment in fossil fuels. This was about 3 years ago at one of their nationwide, I forget the word they call it, not synod, I forget the United Church get-together once a year. Another example of divesting is that undertaken by the United Church of Christ in the U.S., which is a sister denomination of the United Church in Canada. They called for divestment from and boycott of companies that are complicit in the Israeli occupation in the West Bank and Gaza. And this started in 2015. So if a company, an Israeli company, had its manufacturing plant or whatever it was selling in the West Bank, that company's off the list. Unitarian congregations throughout North America have advocated for divesting from fossil fuel companies. In a sermon by Reverend Fred Small of the First Parish in Cambridge, Massachusetts, he talked about the moral obligation to pay attention to climate change. He said, "Global warming is theft from our children and from the most vulnerable of the Earth's peoples, most of them poor and of color. Global warming threatens every society on Earth and the natural systems on which they depend, including countless other species. Those most responsible for climate change are least at risk. But because we're all connected, we're all at risk. Trying to find traction in the great struggle against global warming, a movement has sprung up demanding divesting from fossil fuel companies. And it's gaining momentum. Divesting isn't the only tactic to arrest climate change, and it may not be the best tactic, but it's a crucial one." There are many other congregations in the U.S. as well, and I got lost looking at all of them. There's, you know, long list. So I've outlined three different strategies, all of which have similar objectives. Does ethical investing work? Can the actions of many push institutions or corporations to make different decisions? I think there's been a couple of examples of that. Can investors push companies to make changes for the betterment of society? The end goal of all of these three strategies is improving environmental, social, and governance performance while providing a financial return. So that piece is always there. There's another discussion to be had, I guess, about which one should come first, the moral and ethical obligations or the financial return. Alan Harmon, the investing advisor for the CUC, suggests that the advantage of divesting is that it sends a strong ethical and sustainability message, and it's easy to apply. But to be able to divest, you cannot be in a pooled investment or index investment unless it's a socially responsible fund. And you must be able to buy and sell individual securities, which isn't as easy as you might think. You must also have access to corporate ESG information. And finally, you must come up with a yardstick to determine what is for you a good or bad company. At what point do you divest? A good example would be an environmentally friendly company, say a solar panel manufacturer, but they have bad labor relations. How do you quantify the good or bad behavior? He goes on to say, divesting is also problematic from an investment management view. It limits diversification. I'm not sure I agree that this is as important, but again, it all depends on our individual choices. The oil, gas, and mining sectors in Canada make up 50% of the mutual funds and other kinds of securities in Canada that people buy. It's mind-boggling, actually. So if you have 50% of the companies that are off the table right away, how does that help your own personal financial safety? The advantage of engagement is that it permits investment in any company, thus resolving the concerns about divesting. It permits pooled or index investing. It identifies the specific concern with a company's operation and may facilitate change. So for the example of the solar panel manufacturer, you could buy the stock but attempt to have them change their labor practices. The disadvantages are that it doesn't send a strong and ethical statement, and it's very difficult to apply. If divesting is a blunt instrument, engagement is a pointed one. Those are his words also. The two approaches are not mutually exclusive. And Alan Harmon says, many of our clients, one of which is the CUC, apply both. And while there are many examples of both strategies affecting corporate change, the recent banking industry practices in the U.S., and I think here he's going back to 2008, and the consistent environmental degradation by the mining, oil, and gas industries show we have a long way to go. And back to Reverend Small from Massachusetts. He suggests that these days many young adults won't even consider a religious community that discriminates on the basis of sexual orientation or gender identity. Unitarian Universalism has attracted many young adults because of our prescient stand for equal rights. How will climate-savvy young people view our movement if we reject fossil fuel divestment? And this is still Reverend Small. Unitarian Universalists were out front on GLBTQ issues. That's this from the U.S. And other religions are still catching up. Will we lead on climate justice, or will we fall behind and then find ourselves scrambling to catch up to other religious communities with greater foresight? I certainly agree with Alan Harmon that we have a long way to go. I'm not happy that so many large corporations with huge balance sheets are the chosen investments in ethical funds. I'm starting to lean more to divesting or impact investing. And perhaps there have been positive changes in corporate governance. I think we can see some of that. But I think that environmental performance and socially responsible investing are more important. Whether the diverse board governance would change that, who knows? I don't want to knowingly invest in corporations that abuse human rights or release harmful pollutants or ignore indigenous rights. Reverend Small said it well from a sermon 3 years ago. If the coming decades prove as grim as climate scientists predict, we're all in for a very rough ride. As we struggle for a better, healthier, more just world, we must not succumb to hatred or bitterness. How we treat one another, even our opponents, during this long emergency will determine what kind of society comes out on the other side. So these are pretty depressing words, really. And he wrote this 3 years ago, before the massive fires that have been happening all over the U.S. western part of the country and are still happening. And in Canada. I mean, we've seen this over and over, so I wish I had more optimistic words to offer. And this last piece is a quote from a poet, Nina Metzger. There are those who are trying to set fire to the world. We are in danger. There is time only to work slowly. There is no time not to love. Blessed be. Now, Joanne, would you like to answer questions? Oh, why, sure, thank you. On the other hand, I see that it is 11:25, so I don't know how people feel about this. We can, couple of questions, if people have them, or comments. I won't say questions because I don't have answers.
I can go over the mic.
Jim
here.
Will carry the mic. Thank you.
As I was telling you before, I'm always intrigued by the idea of actually taking an active role at board meetings. If you have a share, you can be heard. But that involves sometimes a lot of travel and expense, and not everybody is up for it.
How do you know if you're investing in something ethical? When you go to your investment advisor, can you say, is this an ethical company that I'm in, or is this good for me, or is this a safe investment? How do you know without doing a lot of homework?
Well, in theory, that's why the funds called ethical funds were first started, because then those people working for ethical funds would do that research. And there are actually lists of what are called socially responsible mutual funds that people have put on the internet, and there are organizations that screen companies. Whether or not an individual investment advisor knows about these, that's a good question. They should, and they should be able to find some for you if that's something that you express an interest in.
Thanks, Joanne. Yeah, I agree with you about the board governance thing. I remember one case of an Indigenous man who was appointed to, I think, Cameco or something. So he was shilling for the uranium industry. And I just thought, what a that's pathetic, you know. They get a native person, put him on a board, and he's pushing uranium. I thought it's just not what I want to do. Also, I think a lot of companies do what's called greenwashing, which means you push some aspect. It's like health foods, you know, no sugar, but it's full of fat or something. Mm-hmm. Same sort of thing in terms of corporations. Like even cooperatives where I used to work, you know, they said, yeah, we're really environmentally safe and stuff, and we do good stuff. And they were cutting down use of paper and use of chemicals and various things like computer stuff. But they actually had a 400-car parking lot heated in the winter, which is right there and still running for 20 years. What kind of ethical thing is that? And I brought that up. Of course, nobody said anything about it. But, yeah.
Yeah, so the question is, do we think, okay, there's been advances, there's been changes, and just keep pushing, or how do we do this, And last question.
Yeah, I just wanted to make a comment. I've just been reading a lot about how Trump got elected, actually, and how different networks actually fed into that. And one of the comments I've read two or three times now has to do with the right is organized, and they stack boards and things like that. And I think that people interested in ethical investment and the environment and so forth really need to be organizing and putting people forward to do these jobs. And if we're going to deal with diversity on boards, making sure that the person that's being put forward as a person of diversity or whatever you might call it, actually has an ethical position. Mm-hmm. Because often they're supported by people who actually don't. Anyway, that's good.
Yeah, there's lots of interesting things to say, and we're gonna cut it off at 3 just because of the time factor, and we can talk more downstairs.